Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Office buildings are considered the worst investments on earth, and you're seeing buildings trading for $2 a foot in foreclosure. Those people had just not overpaid for those buildings, they could probably be weathering whatever high vacancy storm they're facing now and then be able to get through the storm, through the dark period they have ahead of them.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed, and today we are joined by Carlos Rovira. Carlos is joining us from Miami, Florida. He is a commercial real estate investor as well as a property manager. His company is Rovira Property Management, LLC. His holdings include two office buildings and four retail strip centers in Kansas City, Missouri. Rovira Property Management operates in KC. They also operate in Miami and Orlando in Florida, managing across a wide variety of asset classes. Carlos, can you tell us a little bit more about your background and your current focus?
Hey, how are you, Slocum? Thanks for having me. Yeah, just in a nutshell, I'm an engineer. I studied engineering in college, quickly realized that the W-2 life was not for me. Bought a duplex, moved into it. My wife and I rented one side, lived in the other, became addicted to passive income after seeing that we were basically living for free. Grew a portfolio over the course of a couple of years in the small multifamily space in Miami. And we've been trading up ever since. We've gone from owning the one duplex to the six commercial buildings. And along the way, we've built up a property management company that services our portfolio and services other people's portfolios. And we're growing that as well. So that's pretty much the gist of it. We can jump into any of the details if you'd like.
There are a couple of questions that just kind of scream at me from your bio, Carlos. First, I don't know if you're a listener of the podcast, but I'm an apartment owner operator based in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I also offer third-party management services specific to my asset class. So a couple of things that come to mind, Carlos. First is, which one came first, the investing or the third-party managing? And how is it that those two have come to be in tandem now?
Well, what came first was the investing. So we purchased our first property. You don't realize how much of a headache management really is until you have a number of units under your portfolio. Having one or two units, it's easy. Not that much heavy lifting. But once you get into the 10, 12, 13, 14 unit range, all of a sudden you realize your phone starts to ring quite a bit. At that point, I decided I wanted to hire a third-party manager because I wanted to be a passive investor. Realized very quickly that property management companies don't necessarily have your best interests in mind. So after two or three firings of property management companies, I realized that really the only way I was going to cash flow was if I became vertically integrated and actually managed it myself. Being an engineer and having the systems and processes mentality, it was very easy for me to come up with just systems and making things work and making things work run smoothly. We opened the property management software, created electronic payments, and it basically streamlined a lot of things that I wasn't really doing before that I was doing manually and was hoping that the property manager would do. But in reality, they didn't really do a good enough job. And when we got to a point where we had probably 30 units, that was when it really started to hurt because cash flow started to take a hit and you start to scrutinize and dive into the details. You realize the property manager is just not optimized. They're not really thinking about your cash flow. So we kind of pride ourselves in the ability to really treat your property, even if it's a third-party management contract, like if it's our own. I like to tell people that not only are you getting a property manager, but you're also getting an asset manager. The asset manager is a person who actually cares about the property performing and is actually taking that into consideration, which most property managers don't really have that expertise. They're really just kind of in the weeds managing tenants and, you know, juggle a bunch of different things. But since I'm an investor as well, my mentality is such that I want to make sure that I zoom out at a high level and take a look at your portfolio and ensure that it's actually, you know, being serviced well. You're actually making money. So yeah, that's kind of how that happened. Very quickly after we started managing our own units, it became evident that we were very good at it. And people just started asking for us to manage their properties and realized it was a very good way to just have a little bit of additional cash flow. And it helps pay my bills. keeps the staff paid, keeps my infrastructure moving, and it allows me to continue purchasing units as well and sort of focusing on the investment side. And I kind of have this sort of pipe dream where I want to create a property management company that isn't toxic. There's sort of this weird codependency that occurs between tenant, landlord, and property manager, especially on the Class C, like the lower class properties. You have a person who basically can't afford to rent, and you have an owner who is trying to make as much money as possible off of this person. And then you've got a property manager in the mix trying to juggle both interests, which are not aligned. And that property manager usually is trying to make as much money off of that owner as possible as well. So it creates this weird, not everybody's on the same page type of codependent relationship, which becomes very dysfunctional in many ways. The property managers get jaded and they get burned out. The renters hate the property manager. The landlord can become very greedy and very kind of slumlordy if the property isn't performing. So I kind of have this vision of growing the PM side more so that I can have enough income to create maybe a mastermind group that can help tenants get out of poverty. Most of us that are in the real estate world got here because we read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and that led us to more books and more education that we don't necessarily get in school. And a lot of these people just don't have the knowledge. So I could be just high in the sky and this could never happen, but I think I'd like to get to a point where if I can get to 1,000 units, launch a free mastermind group and just make it open to all the tenants and teach Rich Dad Poor Dad. Show them that working and trading time for money isn't going to be the way that they get out of the poverty line, and that they can start businesses on the side and change the mindset a little bit and see if that helps. Because at the end of the day, property managers are everywhere. We interact with them all day long. You walk into a commercial building, you talk to a receptionist, that's a property manager. We're surrounded by these people that work in this industry, and it's a thankless job most of the time. And if you can really work from the bottom up to make it not a thankless job, I think we can really do a lot of good in the world and then make a lot of money as well as real estate investors and business people. So kind of went off on a little tangent there.
Yeah, Carlos, let's continue this conversation here. When it comes to the tension, where I can take this conversation at a high level with you, Carlos, where I'm speaking from a similar personal experience to you that will be value add to our listeners, is specific to C-class multifamily, single family as well, but the idea being that what they are renting from the landlord and being managed by the property manager is their primary residence, whether it's single family or larger multifamily. So I very much recognize the tension that you're talking about here. Taking the tenant's perspective, they are renting in that neighborhood a C location because it is affordable. Hopefully, they were placed in a building that you or I manage because they can't afford it, at least based on the qualification metrics that make the most sense to us and also make sense for the tenant. But also you're in a position where the landlord can't justify the kind of expense that a B or C area can because the revenue isn't as high. So in order to be able to cash flow, they have to have a very tight control over their expenses, especially renovation expenses in between tenants. And then you have a property manager who is effectively charging fees for what we do that needs to be able to profit in order to successfully deliver the services that we deliver, between a tenant who's on a budget rent and a landlord who needs tight control over expenses. Thus far, am I describing this the way that you would, Carlos?
Pretty much. And it seems like it's an impossible problem to solve.
So one of the things I've done, and I don't have massive scale. When this episode airs, we'll be managing around 300 units, most of them C-class, loads of neighborhoods all over greater Cincinnati. But one of the things that I've done is I've moved towards hiring virtual assistants in the Philippines, because depending on what they're doing that day, I'm paying between 30 and 50% of what I would have to pay someone in the United States to do that. But one of the things that it allows is property management, especially residential and multifamily property management, is very time intensive. It allows me to staff enough human hours to do all of the work required to be a good property manager at around half or two-thirds of the cost that I would incur hiring people locally to do work that could be done remotely. It means that I can staff all of the time it takes to have a proper management to tenant relationship, all of the communication, the time, the care that should go into that without having to pay someone the going wages in Cincinnati for property management work, if that makes sense. What is it that you're doing as a manager to control your own expenses while delivering a high level of service?
Well, it's a difficult problem to tackle because it requires you to tackle it from various dimensions. For starters, systems and processes are super important because they reduce your overhead. You don't need as many people to manage as many units. And at the same time, you've tackled that dimension, the property management side. You need to set it up efficiently. You can't be crappy. Now there's the two dimensions of the owners versus the tenants, right? It's a three-dimensional problem. On the tenant side, there has to be a level of accountability to ensure that they understand that the property that they are renting, although it is not their home, they don't own it, it is their home. They need to take care of it. They need to change the AC filter. They need to clean. They need to make sure they don't break everything. I've had the same dishwasher for 15 years, but I've had tenants that have broken a dishwasher every year. So there's a certain level of care that I expect tenants to have in their properties. But if the owner has delivered a unit that is completely dilapidated, how do you expect the tenant to take care of something that when they took it over, it was already a piece of junk, right? So the problem is three-dimensional. You need to make sure that you have quality owners who are not slumlords. And then you need to make sure you put quality tenants who are going to take care of the properties that you give them. And then you need to have the systems and processes to make sure that you manage effectively and keep your overhead as low as possible. It's a relationship business at the end of the day, and you need to really be careful about the relationship because if one of those dimensions goes sour, the whole thing comes tumbling down. And that's why I mentioned the possibility of doing some sort of mastermind group or something, because the low-income tenant is a low-income tenant for a reason, and they are living paycheck to paycheck. They're struggling financially. Most of the time, it's not because they're lazy. It's just because they don't understand, and there's a lack of education that we can institute, and we have the power to do it. Just nobody's done it before, right? If you can get your overhead down enough to be as efficient as a property manager as possible, then you have enough cash flow as a property management company to really invest in things to help educate the tenants. If all it takes is the mindset switch of don't trade your time for money to get out of the poverty hamster wheel. A person who works at a 7-Eleven night shift can only make so much money and they can only pay so much in rent. But once they realize that, hey, you know what? Maybe working at 7-Eleven isn't the best use of my time. Maybe I can start a side business that can make me a little bit of extra money, understand the power of having a small business, and little by little get out of that hamster wheel that most people are running on, that the system and the governments kind of keep them in. If you can build some sort of product, some sort of group, some sort of community that can just change the mindset, all of a sudden you've changed the entire dynamic of a renter, especially on the low C-class side. You can tackle the owners in sort of a similar fashion, right? The majority of landlords are not institutional apartment and syndicators, apartment owners and syndicators. They're mostly mom and pops who have one or two units, maybe three, accidental landlords that owned an apartment, moved out into a house, kept the apartment. They don't necessarily understand what it is to be a real estate investor. They don't know what a cap rate is. Basic things that you and I take for granted as seasoned real estate investors, they don't really know. So if they don't understand what it is to be a real estate investor, how are they going to be a high quality rental owner? They don't know. So there's a similar education that most people need to go through, and property managers are in a unique position to be able to help these people understand how to underwrite property, how to manage property, what is quality, what is not quality. Again, I mentioned it could be a pipe dream, but there's so much opportunity to prove that three-dimensional relationship between property manager, owner, and tenant that nobody is doing, nobody has done. And that's why landlords get a bad reputation.
That is where the bad reputation for landlords comes from. Carlos, speak to me and our listeners as if we were that landlord that you're talking about. A landlord in workforce housing neighborhoods where the prospective tenant base is very budget conscious when it comes to the rent that they are willing to pay. and the rents that can be garnered from qualified tenants have a very serious cap because of the budgets with which those tenants are living or need to be living, and the income of the people who are looking to live in that neighborhood. Speak to me and our landlord listeners about how it is that they can both cash flow on their properties and deliver a quality place to live within those budgetary needs.
That's another tough cookie to crack. What comes to mind is quality of tenant. If you do proper screening, if you ensure that you're not just handing out the keys to the first person that knocks on your door, those high quality tenants exist. It may take you a little bit longer to fill that vacancy, but it'll help you save a lot of money and a lot of headaches in the long run. But you need to make sure you deliver a unit that is actually clean, functional. If you deliver a dilapidated, derelict unit, you're going to end up with a crappy tenant because that's the person who's going to agree to take your unit. It is difficult to maintain properties that are not bringing in that much revenue because a refrigerator costs the same amount of money, whether you put it into a $1,200 a month unit or a $2,000 a month unit. You need to understand that that's a factor of the type of class of property you're buying. You need to prepare for that and just be well capitalized and budget for them. But it's definitely a little bit of a slippery slope when it comes to managing expenses. But if you put a good quality tenant in there, you keep them accountable for the things that they are using on a daily basis that you provided them in working order before they moved in. Therein lies the challenge of the property manager and a good quality property management company. Because we're able to manage that and build in certain things into the lease and certain clauses, et cetera, and training and seasoning of tenants to ensure that they actually take care of the place. But if you deliver a unit with a collapsed floor and roaches, what do you expect? You got to make sure you actually provide something that's actually livable.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe. Are you raising capital for commercial real estate ventures? To make sure you comply with security laws and structure deals correctly, talk to syndicationattorneys.com, your premier legal resource for real estate syndicators and fund managers. Syndicationattorneys.com dedicates its practice to helping real estate syndicators and fund managers legally raise capital from private investors. Their experienced team has helped create over $2.75 billion in security offerings, making them industry leaders in the capital raising space. To get a free copy of their book, How to Raise Capital for Real Estate Legally, go to syndicationattorneys.com or text the word FAIRLESS to 844-796-3428. That's FAIRLESS, FAIRLESS, to 844-796-3428. Launch and grow your business with syndicationattorneys.com today. This offer is not valid to Florida residents.
Carlos, I'm pretty sure you and I are saying the same thing here. But the advice that I give to investors and the conversation that I'm having with the landlords for whom I manage, it's a lot easier talking to a business partner because they came to me because I think this way and because of the results that I'm getting by thinking this way. But the advice I'm giving other investors in the conversation I'm having with third-party landlords I manage for is that the two main factors here to achieving good cash flow in C areas, number one is getting the quality tenants available from the prospective tenant base. To your point, if you're renting to whoever shows up first asking for an apartment, you're not necessarily getting someone who's qualified. If you haven't vetted them, done the background, credit checks, verified their income, called references, made sure they meet all of the qualification standards required that make sense for that market or for that submarket, that neighborhood, then you're not putting yourself in a position to get a tenant who is financially and otherwise capable of staying for a year or longer. The other thing is not only getting the apartment in good shape before anyone moves in so that the apartment itself looks attractive to the higher quality prospects within the prospective tenant base, but also handling routine maintenance and the kinds of things that come up while the tenant is there in a very quick manner. Finding the affordable fixes, replacing the parts on a newer refrigerator instead of replacing it, because to your point, Carlos, the amount of rent you can collect in a neighborhood does not really dictate the cost of a new fridge. So finding more affordable ways to take care of the tenant, but making sure that those tenants who are well qualified, much more likely to pay rent on time every month and stick around, feel like they have a home they want to stick around in. Paying for maintenance in the moment is one of the things that prevents you from paying for vacancy and the apartment turn when someone moves out sooner than they would have if they felt like they had been treated better. Does that make sense, Carlos?
It's a great point on the maintenance side. I have this conversation with my wife all the time. She's our COO, and it's that sometimes I feel like we baby our tenants too much. We provide too good and too fast service to the point where sometimes they try to take a little more than they probably should from us. So sometimes being a little bit slower is beneficial because it doesn't tempt people to try to take advantage of you. So it's kind of a difficult dance to play. But yes, getting to maintenance, especially the important maintenance stuff, quickly and efficiently is key. And the damage that something that is deferred maintenance can occur if you just don't deal with it right away is far worse than going ahead and doing it. And I've had rental owners in the past that are just so slow to respond to our approvals, because if anything above $500, we have to get their approval. It just takes so long. Like, I had one guy whose floor was collapsing, and it was like a $1,200 fix, and the guy just wouldn't respond, and he was overanalyzing, and it's like, dude, the floor is falling, man. You're going to get sued, and we're going to get sued. So those are types of things that really need to get addressed and need to get dealt with very, very quickly. And like you said, a tenant that has that problem and you manage it and fix it immediately, they're going to stay. They're not going to want to go anywhere else.
Yeah, it's always a bathroom floor. And it's always the result of, in my experience, a leak that never got addressed. In other words, rotting, and now it's sinking.
Yeah, I've had.
Yeah, I've been there, man. C-class bathrooms will give you problems you never knew existed as a landlord or as a manager, especially with inherited tenants that you didn't have the chance to place. I guess to put a pin on this before we transition the conversation, Carlos, I think what I'm saying, and then I want to hear your thoughts as well. I've been saying for a while that vacancy is the number one killer of cash flow, not only because vacancy means you're not collecting rent, but you have to go through the process and the expense. Even if you self-manage, it's the expense of your time involved in the leasing process and in the make-ready process. Because if we're being honest, we're not always in a position to charge the tenant as much as we need to be able to, or collect from the tenant as much as we need to be able to for tenant-caused damages and an apartment turn. Sometimes the security deposit doesn't cut it, especially in lower-income areas where the deposit, if it's held to 1 month's rent or lower, just doesn't cover that much renovating. The most important thing that C area landlords can do to remain cash flowing and remain with a solid return on their financial asset is to get the apartments in a really good condition before they're rented, or have very defined standards that all prospective tenants have to meet in order to move in, so that you know you're getting people who are capable of staying, assuming that they want to. And then help them want to stay by addressing maintenance concerns and helping those tenants feel like they're being taken great care of, so that they want to stay as long as living in that location and that size of a place makes sense for them.
Totally. And I'm with you on the vacancy thing. Vacancy is the biggest threat to your cash flow. It's a wild card. You never know how long the place is going to be vacant. You know, you have sometimes the owner who is a little bit unrealistic in terms of the rent that they can potentially get for their property. And then you list it and it just kind of sits there. And a month goes by, and if you could have rented it for $200 or $300 cheaper, you would have had it rented. And now they just lost a whole other month of potential cash flow because they were stubborn and they didn't want to just price drop the property fast enough. So you kind of have to play with that relationship a little bit to bring them back to reality. But to your point, if you had treated the tenant well and maintained the property, they probably wouldn't have left to begin with. So I totally agree with you on all counts there.
One more quick point and then we'll transition the episode. I recently doubled the cost of the paint that we purchase for all of our apartment turns, regardless of location, regardless of what the market rent is going to be. We have a really good relationship with Sherwin-Williams, and now every single space, regardless of the rent, is getting duration paint from Sherwin, because the cost of paint is roughly 10 to 15% of the cost of the project to paint, because the vast majority of what you actually pay for is labor. So if you're willing to buy more expensive paint, there are upper middle class people who are buying cheaper paint than duration for their own homes. I get a pretty sweet discount for the volume that we purchase from Sherwin. But the reason we're using duration paint is that all of it, including the flat sheen, is completely washable. And my goal is to reduce the amount of money that's going to have to be spent next time this apartment is vacant. I want to minimize the amount of repainting we have to do, because the cost of the project that is labor, I just don't want to have to incur it next time. So across the board, everyone's getting paint that is only one step down from the luxury emerald brand of Sherwin. It's going to cost a little bit more now, but it's going to last a lot longer. And it's going to withstand more tenants and more turnovers without us having to go through the labor of repainting.
Yeah, I love that. Paint is killer, man. You basically have to paint every time there's a turn. I'm a big fan of the Magic Eraser. It really works. You ever tried Magic Eraser? You can pretty much clean off all the scuff marks, and it looks like the place is freshly painted, even though you haven't.
That's a great, helpful tip, especially for people managing or landlording in affordable neighborhoods. Well, Carlos, are you ready for the best ever lightning round?
Let's do it.
Awesome. What is the best ever book that you recently read?
Well, there's this book called The Best Ever Apartment Syndication Book. It's pretty good. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's actually a book that got me into commercial. Some of the buildings we own, we syndicated, and I learned about syndications through that book. So it's a pretty good one, so I'll stick with that one.
What is your best ever way to give back?
Well, like I mentioned, I'd like to start a mastermind group to help the tenants. I'm trying to figure out a way to weave genuine contribution into my business organically. So I'm not just writing a check to charities. I'm actually helping the community by doing my business. So let's see how that works out. Check back with me in 5 to 10 years.
Carlos, given where this conversation has gone, I want to talk about multifamily operations, whether it's a property that you own, have owned, or a property that you manage third party. Specific to the apartment properties that you have operated, what is the biggest mistake you've made and the best ever lesson that you learned from it?
Yeah, the biggest mistake I probably made is not screening my tenants correctly. That's something in the very, very, very early stages that you just kind of get a little desperate and want to get the person in there. And that ends up being the most costly scenario if the tenant may not be a good tenant. The eviction process and the months you wait and the way they trash the units becomes so costly that if you just spent a couple of extra weeks screening and interviewing a couple of different people, not settling, it saves you a lot of headache and a lot of money in the long run.
That makes a lot of sense. That being said, Carlos, what is your best ever advice?
Best ever advice on the real estate side, basis is everything. If you can buy the thing cheap enough, you can get through any market. We're seeing these office buildings now. This is April of 2024, where office buildings are considered the worst investments on earth. And you're seeing buildings trading for $2 a foot in foreclosure. Those people had just not overpaid for those buildings. They could probably be weathering whatever high vacancy storm they're facing now and then be able to get through the storm, or through the dark period they have ahead of them. If they had gotten in at a lower basis and just managed really, really well, that's the best way to win in real estate. So buy smart, manage really well.
Last question, where can people get in touch with you?
You can look up our website, which is rovirapropertymanagement.com. That's R-O-V as in Victor, I-R-A, propertymanagement.com. And you can find me on Twitter, which is now called X. That's twitter.com/TheCarlosRovira. So it's my name with the word the in front of it, because some other guy stole my name. And that's pretty much it. I usually respond. You can email me also, carlos@roverapm.com. That's my email. I usually respond fairly quickly.
Great. And those links are in the show notes. Carlo, thank you. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this episode, please do subscribe to our show. Leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend you know we can add value to through our conversation today. Thank you and have a best ever day.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Have a great one.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.